Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
This is the Macko and Cos podcast live from a very clean Bob Mackowitz's house. How you doing, Bob?
It's pretty arrogant, Matt.
I know.
Pretty arrogant. Technically sounds like a compliment, but really it's just a backhanded slap at me and my family and my wife.
And everyone, really.
Should I email my wife right now and say, hey, Matt doesn't think that you're doing a good job around the house? Because you ripped me to my face. I just wonder, you know, we're 50-50.
Sure, I'll call her later.
Call her now. Call her now. Hang on. Give me your phone. I'll call her now.
All right.
She's in a meeting. Pull her out of it.
All right. You can.
Hang on.
Do you really want to go through? You're not going to be able to work the BlackBerry.
What is this?
It's a BlackBerry. It's simple.
How did it get so cracked? It looks like an elephant stepped on it.
Yeah, I wounded it when I was in New Zealand. That's the screen's all cracked and the bottom plate is gone. I don't know why or how.
Okay,
that happened,
so I'm going to ask the question I think all of our listeners are thinking right now.
Yeah.
How drunk were you?
It's a good question. But I never really that drunk. Like, in, you know, when you go on vacation, you're always a little bit on guard, which means you usually don't get to that final level of drunk. Because I feel that that final level, you have to be in a safe space. Like, I've always said that if I'm in a bad mood or just I'm really tense, I can't get, like,
okay,
really drunk.
Hang on, Cos. Hang on. I got to. You need to be in a safe space?
Yes,
What are you, like Lon Chaney and the Wolfman? Like, what, you got to chain yourself to a radiator?
I find the highest level of drunk requires me to be in a good mood, but also in a place where I feel totally comfortable. If I'm at all on edge or anything's on my mind, it's like my brain won't let me get to that level of drunk. It's some sort of survival thing.
You must have an amazing life because you're at that level of drunk all the time, which means you don't feel very much tension.
You know, Bob, now you're ripping me. I was ripping you about your home, and now you're ripping me about my life choices.
So I'm a slob and you're a drunk. Shall we get on with the sports world?
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Sloppy and the Functional Alcoholic Show. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Sound like the millennial version of Itchy and Scratchy.
Yeah, it's our Itchy Scratchy. Sloppy and Drinky. They mess. They drink.
They mess and mess and drink. Mess. Sorry, I put myself first. My apologies. Yeah, I was pretty.
Shame on you.
Messy and drinky show.
The sloppy and drinky show.
Sloppy and drinky. Sorry, I'm writing that down.
Yeah.
To anybody who knows how to animate out there,
yeah,
give us a call.
We will not be able to pay you, though.
The world needs to see Sloppy and Drinky.
Yeah. It's the newest, biggest hit. Look out there, Kanye, Jay-Z. We're coming for you. So I was tweeting about this, about the contrast of our evenings. I was at the National Club. It was the Oyster Night.
This was two nights ago.
No, last night.
Oh, last night.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Bob, I was at, it's been a busy last 14 hours for the old duder here. I was at this Oyster Night, and it was all you can eat oysters, all being freshly shucked in front of you. Then there was a buffet of other seafood. The roast octopus was great. And then the main dinner with this beautiful branzini. It was a delicious evening for me at the National Club. Shout out to the National Club. How was your night?
I took my daughter to skating. They told us she needs orthotics because her ankles are rolling inwards.
Ching, 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 ching.
Then I was going to watch the World Series, but my wife had to work. So I basically just took care of Charlotte till it was time to put her to bed. And then I went to sleep.
So it was
apparently the game was very good.
Yeah, I went 11 innings.
Yeah, I heard.
I was doing morning radio, and there's no way I was watching all of that game.
So we had identical evenings, really.
We did. Yes.
Oyster, like, all you can eat oyster. Okay, so I've never gotten to that point. I've never done the buck a shuck.
Yeah.
And because generally I find anything that is wildly underpriced is usually wildly under good.
Yes, dangerous.
I learned the hard way at all you can eat sushi.
Yeah. Oh,
Is actually spelled S-U-S-H-E-E.
And an Exante goo somewhere just to throw it in. Yeah.
Crub meat. Yeah. I love me some crub and lobster.
Ooh, let me check on my Ronex. Yeah, I've got time for that. All you can eat splooshy.
So, but they, knowing it's the National, splooshy is pretty funny.
Yeah.
I'm assuming the National Club, though, gets pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was. And the thing is, who gets to eat all you can eat oysters? And you could eat so many where actually you're bankrupting the club.
Do you lose it after 10, though?
No,
is it like wings where you can just keep going and going and going?
I stopped at 21, but that's
21.
21.
There's like Kobayashi territory.
Not even close. There's this one guy, and he's famous. And I sat with him last year, and he had 40.
That's a lot.
And then he had all the other food. So I was recounting this tale to people, and they're like, "Oh yeah, we know that guy." And then I was in line talking about this guy, and the shucker just pointed and said, "Yeah, he's sitting over there." I'm like, "Oh, so in this room, he was like a mini celebrity, the dude who eats like 40 plus oysters."
I was that guy at your some stag, right? Your buddies pointed at me, and it was like, "There she is, the relentless eating machine."
All right, for people listening, and it's everyone, because, I mean, if you're not
listening.
Because you're listening. Yeah. There was a stag, a buddy of mine's stag. We headed at Woodbine Racetrack. And, it's you know, we're in this room, and it's an all-you-can-eat buffet, and you watch the horses. And my Super Bowl party, we don't invite anyone. It's the same group since the early 1990s. Like, it doesn't change. And then my friend Tom Longhurst looked at Bob Mackiewicz and says to me, "Hey, your friend Bob can eat. If he wants to come to the Super Bowl party, we'd invite him." You were invited to the Super Bowl party because of your eating prowess.
I was scouted.
Yeah.
My appetite was scouted. I was like the farm kid who's playing baseball in the sand lot, and some train is pulled over because of repairs, and the scout wanders over to the ball field, and he sees the 6'4" blonde kid firing at 100 miles an hour. Yeah. I was like that. But for food.
Yeah, you were Hakeem Olajuwon for food. It's like, who's this soccer player with really great footwork?
What was that movie called? The Air Up There? About the scout who finds the basketball player in Africa?
Was it Kevin Bacon in that?
I think so.
I feel like it was.
Yeah. Lots to get to today. We've got a great top five, which was born out of our conversation last week. Halloween, just around the corner.
Yeah.
And it's going to be top five secondary horror movie characters. Not the villain.
Nope.
Not the hero, but that person who just adds the perfect spice to your favorite horror.
Here's how I put it, because some of mine, they were barely in it. Others, they're in it a lot. They don't kill and they don't save. That's how I describe it. They ain't killing anyone, but they're also not the main person responsible for saving lives.
I like that way of putting it. They don't kill and they don't save. It's coming up probably in about 20 minutes. We've got our takeaways. Also, I want to play a game called, we've done this before on the pod. You don't know this is coming, but I want to play Is It Wrong?
Okay.
Because I had an Is It Wrong situation pop up in my life.
Ooh, I love those.
And it pertains to recycling day and green bins and the public.
Okay, we'll save it.
So we'll save it. We'll get to that after the takeaways, all right? Yeah. Do you have any takeaways you want to do? I got one about the World Series and analytics. No. You do yours first.
Okay.
First,
a little one. Boo to Mitch Marner and Matt Martin's girlfriends. They were planning for Halloween to go out as Dr. Evil and Mini-Me. That would have been perfect.
Why did they shut it down?
The girlfriends, quote, kiboshed the idea. That from Mark Masters. So Marner and Matt Martin, I had it all planned out, but the girlfriends said no. And I love it with Matt Martin. They brought him on this team for toughness, for face punching, to have his face punched. Like, this is a brave, great, you know, he serves
shot
that
blocking,
role. Shot blocking.
Ferocious in the corners.
But when the girlfriend's like, "No, you're not being that for Halloween." How great would that have been on Instagram or whatever? Just seeing Mitch Marner as Mini-Me. He kind of is a Mini-Me.
By the way, you know what you did there and you didn't even mean to? Mm. You did one of the ultimate sins. It's almost like a wee foul when you talk about your sports team.
Yeah.
What you describe the person as the girlfriend. Which is like when someone says about their wife.
Yeah.
You know, the wife.
The wife. Yeah, I did. So, boo to the girlfriends. That's my mini.
Do you think it's true? Maybe they were just using it as an excuse not to do it.
I heard it from a bunch of sources.
Well, Mark Masters. Yeah. He wouldn't lie.
Yeah, exactly.
Not Mark Masters.
By the way, I'd like to say I heard it from a bunch of sources. You know what it was? Twitter. Just a couple different people on Twitter. Again, I don't have sources. I really don't. But my main takeaway, and
I heard it from a few sources.
Yeah.
The Globe and Mail.
Yeah. It's like back in the day, on air, whenever you would talk about your hockey source, it was always one person.
It was always Merrick.
Yeah,
but actually, in the beginning, it was always Merrick. But in fairness, though, because one of us did something I like to call homework, I did develop sources over time.
Really?
I actually did.
Wow. Yeah. Good. See, I do a lot of prep, but I don't have any sources. Do you want to? Can you reveal
it's
any
just,
of them?
Well, no. I mean, there were people out west, you know. But it's
people
just,
out west.
You just email.
Was it Brian Burke?
It was Brian Burke. Yeah, because you know me and Brian Burke.
Yeah.
He was in a hurry to tell me everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Good point. He wanted me fired.
God, I never.
I was glad he stopped it fired.
Yeah.
Probably would have had me beheaded. You know what, though? And I will say this about Brian Burke. If Brian Burke hates you, don't feel special.
No, you're part of a...
He hates a lot of people.
I met him once at a charity event. Could not have been nicer to me. Of course, we were both drinking. And again, this is the Sloppy and Drinky Show. My main takeaway, I switched it up. I was going to talk about Ron Hainsey and Zaitsev, but I was listening to the Bill Simmons podcast with Masai Ujiri. And he had a great line about for management, because Bill asked him, you know, what management advice would you give? And he said, be more passionate and less ambitious. And I really just kind of, you know, I really kind of dug that line. Because with passion comes ambition anyway, but just whatever you're doing, you know, let passion be your number, be a bigger emotion versus ambition. I kind of like that.
I'm a big believer in the famous phrase, you always get this at management seminars, that good is the enemy of great.
I've never been to a management seminar, but I have heard that quote. Yes.
Okay. Well, I think it's just become pop culture now. Yeah. Pop culture wisdom.
Yeah.
Dilbert wisdom. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer in the opposite, which is great is the enemy of good, mm-hmm. which is kind of like what Masai Ujiri is getting at. You can become so obsessed with winning it all, you forget to actually win, mm-hmm. that everything becomes so magnified in your head. It's got to be, you know, everything or nothing. You know, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. That more often than not gets in the way of actually winning. Mm-hmm. And I know that seems counterintuitive because you're so dialed in, but the truth is passion will take care of most of it. Ambition is actually an ugly quality in a person.
It can be.
More often than not.
Yes.
Passion is rarely an ugly quality in a person.
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends what you're passionate about, but yes.
That's a good point. Yeah. Although I would argue that maybe when you get to the further reaches of passion, it becomes something else.
Yeah.
A bit of a transformation process happens. But I like that, and I like that very much. And you know what? It would be really easy for him to be greedy with his situation because he's in a... His management loves him, like his upper management, his ownership.
Yeah.
And his job's pretty safe. You know, I can't imagine Masai being fired for 3 or 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
He could get nutty.
Oh, if he wanted to, he could do whatever he wants, and he has got that capital. Well, you're right. Nutty, he could, if he wanted to blow it up, he could.
Luxury tax his ass off to try and bring on mm-hmm. Carmelo Anthony no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's... He can GM without fear, and that's the best kind, versus in the final days of Colangelo when, you know, you're bringing in players because you're just trying to, it's like, I got to save my job for this year.
See, I would say that's actually a really great point, because you would think that Colangelo was making bold and risky moves, but he was GMing with fear.
Yeah.
Because he just didn't want to be canned, and he didn't want to look stupid in the basketball community, and he didn't want to be dubbed a failure. Mm-hmm. I'm presuming all this. This is just how his actions played out in public.
Is that what your Western
source
told
My source, that's
you?
Right. My Twitter. Matt, I have the same sources as you on this one. No, he looked like a guy who was just desperate to do anything and not really committed to anything. That's the difference between ambition and passion right there. See, that's an excellent analogy.
Yeah,
I love
there
that.
There we go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Those oysters haven't gotten to you. I think oysters are smart food, aren't they?
They are. But
something about the vitamin E makes you smarter.
Here's the thing, though. So
hornier, too?
Hornier, yeah. You take the smart food, and then you add a lot of wine, and it cancels it out. I got to tell you, the alarm going off this morning, not fun.
One thing I respect about you, Maddie, is even when you do morning radio, you will still party the night before.
Yeah.
And I could never do that. Mm-hmm. I was never able to. You and I led such different. I was a monk. I was a Benedictine monk compared to you. You would be out and home at 1 and quickly, shuttle through the game because you PVR'd it.
Yep.
I had already been in bed for 3 hours.
I'll tell you this, and by the way, Benedict monks, they're the ones invented champagne, Burgundy. Like, in terms of the history of alcohol, mostly it's all religious people who invented all booze or brought booze to the forefront was the monks. But producer Aaron Karolnik, who listens to this, hi Aaron, he can always tell when I'm doing the morning show, if I'm going out, because I'm prepping the hell. Like, I'll ask him, hey, who's on tomorrow's show? Okay, what time are they on? Because I will do so much prep because I know, all right, if I'm going out in the next morning, I got to do all my work.
All right, it's peel the curtain back time. Yeah. So Cos, when he had to go on a piss up, when we used to work together, would be working during the commercial breaks like a madman.
Oh,
because
yeah.
He would know that he had to go home, get in a nap,
yes.
Do whatever chores he had to do for that day. But come, say, 6 o'clock?
Yeah.
That your drinking would start and it wouldn't stop because you were in a safe place.
Yes.
until you were good and done.
Yes.
But watching him during one show prepare for the next one because he was going to drink that night.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't honestly, I would look at this and I say, I can't tell if this is the most responsible or irresponsible thing I've ever seen.
We'll split it down the middle. But let me tell you, I had all my questions for Jack Armstrong, or not Jack, but Marshall Ferguson and everyone else on the morning show today. I had them done yesterday afternoon.
All right. So we digress. So yeah. your takeaway from your big prep that you did for this podcast was you listened to a pod and you thought it was neat that Masai Ujiri said he was passionate.
I can show you.
So Mr. Prep, Mr. How Ready I Am. That was your takeaway.
Do you want to look at my other takeaways? I can show you.
If you have other ones, get to it. Well, no, they better be better than that one though, Matt, because that was pretty dodgy.
The Masai Ujiri passion versus ambition.
I have a takeaway for you, Matt. Mm. I was watching some basketball the other day, and it was really fun.
Uh-huh. Here is my main one. Before was actually just the role of Hainsey and Zaitsev. And how remarkable it is. Like Zaitsev, a year and a half ago, no one knew who that was. And now, who's the main people in charge on the penalty kill? It's Hainsey and Zaitsev. Like, I was going to talk about that, and there was an interesting piece by James Myrtle, but I figured, no. As I was listening to the Masai one, I'm like, oh, I found that
now,
really interesting.
Now, tell the truth. Mm-hmm. Was this takeaway just you reading James Myrtle because you were going out drinking and then repurposing what you read in The Athletic? Like, basically taking a few bullet points and saying, you know what's interesting? And then in ... according to James Myrtle.
In this case, no. And I'm always very honest. Like, when we peel back the curtain...
Matt's turning red right now.
No. I'm always very honest. No. This, I can show you on my notes. But no, the Masai Ujiri one, that is my sports takeaway.
So last night was World Series. I only was able to watch about half the game, which was sad because I missed the part where things got nutty. I watched the part
all
where
the
things
home runs.
Right. I watched the part that was totally predictable. Verlander in charge, the Dodgers pulling a starter after four innings, even though he has seven strikeouts. All the things that were predictable, I caught that. Unfortunately, I had to miss where it went nuts. So here's my takeaway. Last night was proof that you can have all the projected models in the world and all the plans that you can come up with, but in the end, people play sports. Mm-hmm. You know that I think the Astros are going to win this series. Yeah. And you know that I really want the Dodgers to win because I am a Dodgers enthusiast. But I feel like it's going to be the Astros just because of their offense. And their offense can be really disruptive. And you saw it last night. What I thought was so interesting was that the Los Angeles Dodgers are the baseball model right now for how to incorporate analytics into managing. Alex Anthopoulos was on the air yesterday and they were asking him, so do you make the moves for Dave Roberts? Do you tell Dave Roberts when he has to switch pitchers out?
And he said, yes, of course.
He said, absolutely. We've got a purple phone. And when the purple phone rings, he knows it's me because it's the king. No, he denied it, of course. But it's an incredibly analytics intensive environment, as you well know.
Yes.
And man, did they ever play everything by the book? Just a couple stats to throw at you. This bullpen that caved last night pitched 11 and two-thirds innings in a three-game sweep of the Diamondbacks. They pitched 17 and two-thirds innings in five games against the Chicago Cubs. If a starter makes five innings with the LA Dodgers, it's a minor miracle.
Yeah.
Now, in fairness, it also works. They were one of the winningest, greatest regular season teams of all time.
Yeah.
And before last night, they had an almost absolutely spotless record in the postseason. It's been an incredible run. But what happened last night? And this is what I find so fascinating. This is why people play sports. So Kenley Jansen is ready to go, and they're going to bring him in for two innings. But they leave in Brandon Morrow for one more batter to face Bregman. Mm-hmm. Why? When you would say, well, if you were going to bring him in for two innings, why don't you just have him start the eighth and let him roll?
Nope.
Because Dave Roberts said, well, you know, Bregman had a really tough at bat against Kenley, and so I just wanted to give Morrow one more chance, and then ding, ding, ding. Hits a double. All of a sudden, Jansen is pitching in a tricky situation. But that was an intuitive call. Mm-hmm. If you stick by the grid, you just put in your closer.
Hate the grid.
And you don't worry about, well, you looked good against him last night, or I just had a feeling. Yeah. I had a gut feeling. And then what happens, it drops, and Yasiel Puig, a StatCast, had it at a 33% chance that an outfielder should catch that ball, but it just drops in front of him. He stands up, and he throws his glove down to the ground like an angry 10-year-old little leaguer. Once again, emotion. And now all of a sudden you get Jansen winds up blowing the lead, you're into extra innings, and you've already used your best relievers, and the Astros offense does what the Astros offense does. But what I found fascinating about this is they stopped being a machine. Mm-hmm. They have rolled through these playoffs like an analytics-driven machine.
Yep.
Dave Roberts goes to his gut.
And his gut didn't help him.
Backfires on him. But this is why I was fascinated by the World Series, is because you can have all the projective models you want, but when you get into those tight situations, those one-on-one battles, the short series, analytics tend to work better over long periods of time. They're great regular season tools, but most people, even within that community, will say much tougher once you get into the playoffs, because luck plays such a bigger factor.
Of course, luck always plays. Smaller sample size, the more luck can have an impact. By the way, I want his gut to work. Because, you know, I don't want everything to
fail.
Or, no, but I want it to work because I don't want the grid to take over.
Oh, you mean because the Borg is coming and pretty soon you'll be able to play simulated games.
Yeah.
And it'll be the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, you like the gut because you want chaos and you want weird things to happen. And there was like five home runs or six home runs in extra innings alone. And because the way baseball is now, they're all solo shots. Heaven forbid people be on base.
Rich Hill wasn't great, but he did have seven strikeouts through four innings. Mm-hmm. But like you said the other day, what do managers do when you've gone two times through the lineup?
You go on.
You get the hook. Unless you're Kershaw.
Unless you're Kershaw. Yeah, or Verlander.
Or Verlander.
Yeah, there's about like 12 pitchers out there that get to go through a third time. And it's smart. It's smart not to. But also, you know, as a fan, I'm like, you know what? Let's get nuts.
So here's Dave Roberts. So I just felt that Bregman had a really good at bat against Kenley last night. And I felt if Brandon can get Bregman, then I was going to go with Kenley then. Mm-hmm. That's not logical.
Nope.
Or at the very least, it's a kind of a skewed logic. And it's certainly not the same kind of logic that says, in this situation, we do this. And in this situation, we do this, and A follows B or B follows C. It's not the grid. Mm-hmm. And I kind of dug that about last night, even though I thought that is probably the game that's going to wind up costing the Dodgers the series. I still liked it because it goes to show that sports are played by people and people make mistakes and mistakes made for entertainment.
Yes, 100%.
Also, the Golden State game. Sorry to interrupt you. But do you remember what we said would happen?
Well, Golden State would win.
But close game.
Yep, close game.
On the road against the champs, and what happens? Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan revert to ISO ball.
Yep, they did.
And even though they took more threes than the Golden State did last night?
Mm-hmm. They didn't make more threes.
They didn't have the roster for it. But no, but you can see, like, that's a commitment to playing a certain kind of way for a certain amount of time.
You know how many three-pointers DeRozan attempted last night?
How many?
Zero. Ding. Zero, even though they took like 40 or something threes, still none from DeRozan.
But that was your point about human nature.
Yeah.
And we predicted that would probably happen. They would find themselves in a pinch, and it would be very difficult for them to let go of what has worked to this point.
It's the scorpion and the frog. Scorpion says, I need to go across the river. I can't swim. Frog's like, no. I'm not going to take you across. You're going to kill me. Scorpion's like, no, I'm not going to do that. If I kill you, then I die. Frog's like, oh, good idea. Scorpion hops on the frog's back midway across the river. Frog feels a pinch and realizes the scorpion is stinging him. The frog says, well, now I'm going to die. Now you're going to die. Why did you do that? Scorpion says, I'm a scorpion. It's what I do. Same thing with DeRozan. It's who he is. Lowry, it's who he is. You can't get them to change who they are. Maybe it might never happen. It certainly won't happen this early.
It's unrealistic to think that those guys are going to become wildly different when it's crunch time.
Yeah.
I remember Jeff O'Neill.
And they're not 23. You know, they're 27 and Lowry's like 30.
Well, and they're multiple-time All-Stars and DeRozan's been an Olympian. Yes, and they've both had their big contracts, so they've reached that pinnacle.
They've seen, you know, they have success. They know what it looks like. Now they've been told to change.
I remember Jeff O'Neill from Overdrive, and you guys know who O'Neill is. And he said something really smart to me once. He said, if you want to know what a coach really thinks, see how the third line plays. Don't look at the first line because they know they have jobs and they're just out there trying to do what they want to do. But the third line are the guys who are fighting for gigs. Hmm. And they're the ones who are listening to the coach the most. So if you want to know really what they believe, look at the scrubs and not the stars. And that'll tell you what a coach's philosophy really is.
That's interesting. That makes a lot of sense.
I don't know if it's always true, but I got to admit, it made a lot of sense.
It does make sense. Also, one of the most generous guys always picks up the bill. Jeff O'Neill?
Yeah. Oh, he's the best.
Yeah.
He's an incredible teammate. Working with him was neat because I guess coming from that team environment, he approached the idea of being at a radio station differently than a lot of the broadcasters there who are used to having individual careers.
Yeah.
Like most of the broadcasters there are like tennis players. They move from one thing to another and it doesn't make them bad people. It just means that, you know, they're not a teammate in the same way.
Yeah.
O'Neill comes from that, you know, long bus rides in the OHL mentality.
Yep.
And he had dough because he made a ton of dough playing. And there were a bunch of broke kids under 30. And he would always buy apps on O'Neal. Terrific guy. Yeah. Terrific guy.
100%.
Anything you want to get to before
before we get to something else? No, those were my main sports takeaways. We also have listener questions and, of course, the top five secondary horror movie characters.
Do you want to do the top five here?
Sure.
Just because I feel, Maddie, that this is a bit of... You and I both love our lists.
Yeah.
And I think things are going to get pretty nerdy. So if you don't like nerdy stuff, you may not want to listen to the next 10 minutes.
Well, you know, if you're listening to this, we're pretty nerdy.
Excellent point.
Yeah.
Who are we kidding?
Yeah. So top five. Do you want to reveal each list, go back and forth? How do you want to do this one?
You know what? You do yours, Maddie, because you just... drum up so much enthusiasm. It's so it's fun to see.
Yeah, and also then usually let's see if Bob. You're not going to hate mine. My apologies, by the way. Two that didn't make the list. One, Tangina, the small actress from Poltergeist, played by Zelda Rubinstein. The character's name Tangina, the woman that comes in to help fight the Poltergeist. She didn't make the list. Also, comedy did not make my list. Gene Hackman in Young Frankenstein and Bill Murray in Zombieland. All excellent and all just in small moments made those movies better. They didn't make my list.
All right, so let me add one to that before you do your list. And the one that didn't make my list, also for comedy, didn't make my list, but for Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Okay.
The movie,
yeah.
Paul Reubens.
He was great in that,
so great.
Yes.
When he wants to kill the Buffy.
Yeah.
And... Luke Perry.
Luke Perry.
And he looks at Luke Perry because Luke Perry's taking his arm off.
Yeah.
Kill him a lot. I love that line.
Yes, he was great. And like no one had seen Pee-wee in ages. That was like one of his first sort of comeback sort of things. Number five for me, Zelda from Pet Sematary. She was the dirty little secret sister. She was the one locked in the bedroom. And you saw the flashbacks, the Denise Crosby character, Rachel Creed, and then her as a little girl having to feed Zelda. And then eventually Zelda dies and her back is all twisted. Just a creepy, she's only in two scenes, but she's one of the main things I remember from that movie is Zelda.
And Zelda's a scary name.
Yes.
Anything with a Zed, I think, is a scary name.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Maybe because of the eternal sleep or something.
Ooh, that's good.
Poetic. Yeah. All right. So we got Zelda from Pet Sematary.
Yes.
Nice pick, by the way.
Number four. He appeared in three movies, but he was best in part four, played by Corey Feldman. I'm talking about Tommy Jarvis. Tommy. Because before this, I never thought that any human being would fight Jason Voorhees. Jason Voorhees was, you know, just the human killing machine. And in comes Tommy. And in the other movies, he has a little bit more bravado. He's actually hunting Jason. When did you ever see that?
Isn't he kind of the hero of that movie, though?
No. I guess he does help. He does help kill Jason, but the Corey Feldman scene where he shaves his head because he remembers what Jason looked like as a kid and he distracted Jason so that his sister could come and kill him. And then at the end, he's hugging his sister and it freezes on his crazy eyes.
I don't
love
know, Maddie.
Tommy Jarvis.
I kind of feel like that's too close to being a main character because there's some saving involved. He's actively engaged. He's one of two participants in the defeat of Jason. So I don't know if I'm going with you on that one.
He's in three movies. I had to get someone from Friday the 13th.
Kevin Bacon from the first one.
He's not as memorable. He's not as memorable as Tommy Jarvis.
I don't know, Matt. And I always find you do this. This usually most of our arguments are procedural arguments.
I admit.
I
admit he does some saving and some killing. It's true.
What was the first rule you came up with?
No saving and killing.
And what the second choice you came up with is?
A guy who helped save his sister and helped kill Jason Voorhees. Number four, Tommy Jarvis. At number three, Richard Jenkins in Cabin in the Woods plays the character of Sitterson, one of the guys in charge of all the horror movie constructs. And he is so good. Like, I love some of his lines. Like, for instance, the Japanese crew is not doing their job. And he goes, they bleeped us. How hard is it to kill 9-year-olds? A hilarious line that he delivers.
Does he actually say they bleeped us or are you just afraid to swear?
I'm just afraid to swear. I'm trying to keep it clean. And so, yeah, number three, both the guys, those roles were hilarious. But I love Richard Jenkins in Cabin in the Woods coming in at number three for me.
That's a really good one. Was he the one who just wanted mermen?
Mm-mm. That was
that's Bradley.
Yeah, it was Bradley
Whitfield.
Yeah, Bradley Whitfield.
Right, okay,
just Merman. Checking. Yes, I love Merman. Number two for me. And when we first thought of this, doing this topic, this was the first name that came to mind. He's not number one. My number one's kind of an obvious one, but at number two, Lloyd, the creepy bartender from The Shining.
Ooh, good one.
Played by Joe Turkel. He also was in the original Blade Runner with Dr. Eldon Tyrell. That's the character, the actor. But Lloyd, the bartender, like just so creepy, and his face is so angular, and he's just standing there. What will it be? And just I loved him in that role. He was creepy, foreboding, but also as part of the podcast is drinky. I'm like, I would love to have a drink with that guy. Okay. I'd love to be served a drink.
All right, so that's not bad. I'll tell you this, though. I think, one, we both agreed that Scatman Crothers from The Shining can't count because this is kind of like an award named after him as the perfect secondary character.
Yeah.
We talked about that during the last pod.
Yeah.
But isn't Grady the caretaker a better secondary character? Think about the speech in the bathroom in The Shining, if I may.
Yeah.
I corrected them.
Yes.
Talking about how he killed his family.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Mr. Torrance, I expect you to correct your family. So creepy. I corrected them.
So creepy. Oh, no, he is.
You've always been the caretaker.
He was a great one. I was debating between the two, but there's just something about Lloyd that I
booze. That's what it is. Yeah. Something about him is he gives you drinks.
Yeah, he does. And your money's no good here, sir. And just the first time when Jack just sees him, he's so happy.
And he taps his pocket.
Yeah.
I'm a little short, my good man.
Yeah.
And your money's not good here, sir.
Number one, it's an obvious one, but it has to be on the list. He certainly doesn't do any saving. I guess he tries to do some killing, but he doesn't do a very good job at it. And number one, Quint.
Mine is a number one from Jaws 2, but I feel like Quint is too major a character.
But he doesn't come in until like 30 minutes into the movie. You see him once before when he's on the boat, but he comes in the movie about 30 minutes, and you know, in the end, he certainly makes things worse. But one of the most iconic horror movie characters, number one for me. I just had to go one obvious one. You know, certainly Lloyd, Richard Jenkins, Zelda. These are minor characters. I had to throw in Quint.
I also disagree with Quint because I think he's too major. And I considered that one, too. And I have a Jaws character as well. But I feel like he's not really secondary. He had his name above the title on the poster.
Well, that's only because he was a bigger star at that time than either Roy Scheider.
Still, be that as it may, he wasn't really a minor character. He was on screen.
But he was secondary.
But he was on screen for more than half the movie, though.
But he was a secondary character. Roy Scheider, the shark, and why am I blanking?
Hooper?
On Hoopa. Like, those were the main
I think
characters.
Quint is on the movie almost as much as Hoopa
no.
is. But it's pretty close.
No,
because don't forget, there's the scene where he goes to talk to the council to begin with. Hooper is on more. There's no question about it. But not wildly more.
But even that,
you got to go back and do the accounting on this one, Matt.
No. That speech, that still was a short one. You know,
how can you give a guy who does the U.S. Indianapolis speech secondary status?
Because he's not the main character. He's not one of the main characters. He is, I would call him the fourth character in that, behind two humans and a shark.
All right.
Number one.
I'm not sure I agree with you.
Number one, Quint. And by the way, no, I could not have Dr. Sam Loomis on the list. I know a lot of people were saying Sam Loomis, maybe the greatest horror movie monologue.
Too major a character.
But he was too major.
All right, so I'll just quickly zip through this. Margaret White from Carrie, who plays Carrie's religious mom.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely terrifying. Tortures Carrie, locks her in a closet. She has that creepy speech about, her whole speech is nothing but. And then, spoiler alert, when Carrie winds up wasting her with her telekinesis,
mm-hmm.
I still have nightmares about that. Piper Laurie, I believe she was nominated for an Oscar for that role. Absolutely fantastic. Margaret White from Carrie.
Great choice, but here's my one thing. If you're going to get on me for how integral Quint is in Jaws, I feel you're number five. She's in that movie and playing that much. Famous monologue. I feel that if you're going to deduct points for
Quint. She doesn't
have
much screen time, though.
If you're going to deduct points for Quint, I'm just going to mention.
Okay, but let's talk percentages here, though, Matthew. Like, if you're going to talk about percentage of time that Margaret White is on screen versus percentage of time that Quint is on screen, it's not even close.
Hey, if you want to go by pure analytics, you're right. But if I'm going to go by my gut, My gut says that she certainly pushes a lot of that story.
Matt, we're all entitled to our own opinions, but we're not entitled to our own facts. Moving on. Mm-hmm. Annie and Linda from Halloween, the two buddies of Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yep.
There's always the girls who wind up getting attacked, wasted by the killer, and they always have the same attributes. They like sex, they like fun. Mm-hmm. This was a classic trope of the late 70s.
They
and
like
80s.
Burying their breasts.
Yeah. Well, even Annie, she spills a little bit of food on her, and the first thing she does is better strip. But these characters, actually, I'll give John Carpenter some credit, even though, like, this is the classic, you know, at its worst, it's like, you know, it's just straight up misogyny, but these characters were a lot more fun than the usual. Like, they were stock characters that didn't feel like stock characters. You actually liked them.
Yes.
And so when they did get killed, it wasn't just simply like, it wasn't like Michael Myers was on the on deck circle and swinging a bat with the big weighted, like the big weighted donut, just waiting to get to the final girl. Mm-hmm. There was actually progression here. You cared about the characters. So
yes, they certainly are the broth of the horror movie soup, but that's broth with some depth.
Jack Goodman, who is played by Griffin Dunn in American Werewolf in London. He is the walking meatloaf. Mm-hmm. He is the protagonist's buddy who gets killed on the moors by the werewolf, but he keeps coming back as the talking zombie. And it's funny, like, this has to be the best exposition in a film ever, because he's like, Jack, you're a werewolf. You know what you got to do. You got to take yourself out, buddy. This is, you know, you're going to cause so much suffering. Look at me. Look at me. I'm dead. It's boring. And every scene he comes back in and he's more decomposed.
Yeah.
Genius. Mm-hmm. This is a very small one, but I love it. You and I went and saw Freddy versus Jason together.
We sure did.
And there was that one guy. So Jason runs amok at the runs amok at the Bush party.
Yes, I know what you're going to say.
He's chopping up people with a machete. And that some hammered kid looks at him and says, man, that goalie is pissed. Yeah.
That might be the single funniest moment in any of the Jason movies.
Cause and I were rolling in the aisles. Yeah. Man, that goalie is pissed.
And it's a good one.
And number one, I also took from Jaws, but I feel it's a more representational secondary character, the mayor. Yeah. The mayor in Jaws is so great. He's every sleazy character that is at the heart of a conspiracy and a horror.
Yeah.
He's covering up the truth. He's really to blame. And he's got one of my favorite speeches in any movie ever. When he's on camera and he's trying to talk about how they killed the shark.
Yeah.
And because he wants all the bathers to come back to Amity. And he says, well, we have caught and killed a large predator that allegedly injured some bathers.
Yes. So creepy. Or so slimy, excuse me. And the worst part is Roy Scheider. He gets blamed when the widow comes and is pissed off at Scheider. Roy's like, it's not my fault. It's the mayor. Don't lump me in with that guy.
And the great scene where he's there with the coroner, and the coroner's obviously been spoken to by the townspeople. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, it could be a boat accident.
Yeah.
And then Hoopa gets to him later.
Yeah.
This is no boating accident.
Yeah.
So, yes. And the mayor, and by the way, if you notice really carefully, the mayor has a suit. And there's tiny anchors on it.
Yes, there are. There are tiny anchors.
Which is literally the worst sports jacket in history.
It was. But by the way, Richard Dreyfuss. How can I not remember that name earlier? Anyway. The mayor is a great, great character.
That was a serious nerd out, buddy.
Yeah, that was.
Serious, serious nerd out.
Yes, it was.
We have listener questions to get to. Shall we do that?
Yeah, sure, we do. We will start with, Stephen wrote in, hey, Bob and Matt, super specific question. More underrated Toronto athlete, Giovinco or DeRozan? Coming at you with a Wheeler-esque question that, of course, Gareth Wheeler.
Gareth Wheeler loves to stir it up. Yeah. That is actually a really good observation. That is a Wheels-type question. Why don't you take this one, Matty?
Well, because I don't watch a lot of soccer, I'm going to go DeMar DeRozan. Every year, he's ranked in the mid-30s, whether it's Sports Illustrated, ESPN, or Tim Bumtemps from the Washington Post. So I'm going to go DeMar DeRozan. Every year, he gets better. Every year he helps the Raptors. He's been the best player, or, you know, sometimes second best player, him or Lowry, on teams that have won 50 plus games, that have gone to a game 7 against the Cleveland Cavaliers, or no, game 6 against the Cavs 2 years ago, not as well last year. So I'm going to go DeMar DeRozan, who'd be a bigger star if he played in the United States.
Would he be, though? Let me ask you, if he's not the 30th best player in the NBA or the 35th or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's like he gets ranked around 33rd.
So what is he?
I think he's about 20 to 25. Really? And the thing is, 8 to 10 spots, that's a lot. You know, like you think, oh, it's only 8 to 10, but man, there's a lot of guys that they got ranked over him. I think DeMar DeRozan also, he's usually healthy for most of his career. And health, I think, is an underrated attribute we don't give enough credit for. So I'm going to go DeRozan.
So I'm going to poke holes in this theory a little bit.
Okay.
He was the third team NBA All-Star. Mm-hmm. He was on the Olympic team, and he's a multiple-time All-Star. So other than, you know, rankings that have him placed, say, anywhere between 8 and 10 players too low, mm-hmm. where is he wildly underrated?
Well, first off, the Olympic one, you know, a lot of players said no, and they didn't want to hang out on a cruise ship surrounded by Zika. So, you know, DeRozan, he made the Olympic team. Good for him. But he's underrated because he should be ranked higher. Because you don't
but to say that he's ranked around 35, but he really should be somewhere between 30 and 25. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not a wild. It's not like he was a top 10 player and you put him at 25 or 30.
No, but it's still disrespectful for a guy who, you know, like started the year last year, like 7 or 8 40-plus point games, you know, 40-point games to start, and he still didn't get enough credit.
Even on his own team, he's not considered the most important part, though.
Some nights he is, some nights he's second.
And the defensive liabilities. He's a great offensive player, or at least he's a very great. He's got a great offensive game, mm-hmm. but his inability to shoot threes,
yep.
issue. Mm-hmm. His inability to guard on the perimeter,
issue.
Yep. And when we talk about how the team has to evolve, don't we really mean they have to get past the limitations that DeMar DeRozan puts on them?
Bob, I've only seen Giovinco play once. I had to see DeRozan.
I think ranking him in the 30s is actually fair. I think calling the Raptors the sixth best team in the East is stupid. I think they're better than that. I think they're probably the third best team. But
yeah, it's Cleveland, Boston, and then it's Milwaukee and Washington. You can make an argument both are better than
I would say flip-flop between Washington and Toronto, mm-hmm. and a lot of that depends on health. And we'll see, actually. Serge Ibaka is the big part of that. It's not DeRozan. Yeah. If Ibaka's good, then they're the third best team. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to see the benches coming along. Yeah, I don't think DeRozan's wildly underrated, but this is a question of venue because I actually think you prove why Sebastian Giovinco is the more underrated player.
Yeah, I've only seen him play like once.
But that's the point, isn't
it? I know.
It
is.
That he's the best player in his league.
He is the best player in his
and
league.
And because you don't follow the league, he flies under the radar. But he is the Austin Matthews is the most exciting athlete right now.
Yeah.
But I'm not even sure Austin Matthews is as good to the hockey world as Sebastian Giovinco is to the North American soccer world. Like, Giovinco's at the top. Mm-hmm. The top. Matthews may grow into that one day, and he's a hockey player, so of course he's going to get our attention. But Giovinco is the best player in the game. Mm-hmm. I'll put it to you this way. It was a bit of a scandal that he was left off the Italian national team.
Was it?
The Italian national team.
Oh.
He made the point that he thought TFC could win a Serie A, could be middle of the table in Serie A. Now, I don't think that that's true.
No, I don't agree with that.
You know,
what's Serie A? That's the Italian league.
So you're going with DeRozan.
Yeah, I'm going with DeRozan.
Okay.
Chris writes in at Easy2Savvy, I love this question. If you can punch one of the seven dwarfs in the face, which would it be? Now, I also, because I did my research, I looked them all up. Doc, Grumpy, Happy, Sleepy, Bashville, Sneezy, Dopey. If you could punch one of the seven, I bet your answer is Happy.
I'm not going to lie to you.
I bet it's Happy.
It's actually Sneezy.
Okay.
Happy, well, I never punched you, uh-huh. and you're kind of Happy the Dwarf.
Yeah, so we're not Doc.
No, it's Sneezy, because don't you ever have that experience where you say bless you to someone who sneezes, they sneeze again, you say bless you,
yeah,
and then you're not sure exactly when to stop blessing them?
I give three. I give people fair warning. I got three bless yous for you. That's it.
Yeah, my thing is two bless yous, but the second one comes with after this, shut up.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So, but imagine sneezing all day long, every day. Wouldn't you eventually go nuts and cold cock that person?
So you have no sympathy for the ill. that's great, Bob. Let me get some empathy.
Okay, how about you there, Punchy?
Dopey. Yeah, hey, listen, stop being so dopey. Boom. I punched Dopey.
That's your answer?
Yeah.
Poor Dopey? Yeah. Dopey's like the happy. They should call, never mind Happy. Dopey's happier.
Oh, that's another debate. Who is happier, Dopey or? No, I'm punching Dopey in the face. Michael writes into the show at Bro Dufungo. Fuggins. Yeah. Have you been to a drive-in movie in the last 3 years? If not, should we do away with them? Have you been?
I haven't been, but we shouldn't do away with them.
No.
Because I don't drive. so I can't really go. But I would.
Yeah. Actually, why would I ask if you've been to a drive-in movie theater?
Yeah, Matt, and I think that we should drive-throughs, any of that stuff. Not really relevant.
Last time I went to one, the problem was so much of it was subtitled. I went to see Inglourious Basterds. And unfortunately, that didn't work out so well because of the of all the subtitles. I love drive-in movie theaters. They're great.
Do you ever scam movies in the sense that drive-ins are built for scams, right? You load up the trunk or you throw a blanket over someone. I mean, that's a pretty common memory a lot of people have from when drive-ins used to be popular.
Yeah.
Do you ever do the two movies in a day where you just go to see the one movie at, say, 7 and then just walk into the theater at 9?
Oh, yeah, I've done that.
Isn't it the sweetest? Like, don't it's you find great. That second movie, it doesn't matter what it is?
It's free money. It's a free movie. It's a free money.
Yeah. I went and saw Troy with Brad Pitt that way, which is a piece of garbage.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Loved every. It's like seeing a plane on a movie. You can't watch a bad plane on a movie.
That's not true.
Or a bad movie on a plane, I should say.
We can debate that. But I agree. Like, and also, movie theater security. It's 14-year-olds looking at their phone who don't want to be there. It's the easiest thing.
You just look at the schedule, see which one has got the open door as soon as your movie is finished, and then you just walk right in.
You walk right in.
That's why I try to buy popcorn every time I go, apart from the fact that I love popcorn.
So good.
So good. It's like a religious experience.
Popcorn is the one thing that we're all reduced. Like, it's the only thing you eat like an animal. Like, you just grab a handful, and you just shove it in your mouth.
Matt. It's the only thing you eat like an animal.
Buffalo Phil, what would happen if for 24 hours there was no cell phones or social media? One of two things. Everyone links arms in harmony and there's universal peace, or the planet blows up. It's one or the other. If 24 hours with no cell phones or social media.
The answer, Buffalo Phil, is sex. Sex would actually happen. Mm. There is no greater buzzkill out there than social media. In the married existence.
Yes.
And I think to all, but you guys aren't a social media family, you and your girlfriend.
No, we're not.
It's not really your thing.
No.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, Facebook has basically turned into the gigantic vortex of people's energies.
Mm.
Yeah. If I could, I would just lob the whole thing into the ocean.
And more lovemaking. Chelsea writes in, what's the dumbest way you've been injured?
I know my most pretentious way to be injured was I got an infected finger when I was opening up crab's legs, and I kind of nicked my finger, my forefinger on my right hand.
Yeah.
With one of the little pointy outy sticky sharpie things.
Clearly you're not at the National Club.
No, clearly. And also not the only thing I eat like an animal. Yeah. It's popcorn. I had a really sore finger, had to wrap it up, all that kind of stuff.
That's a great one.
From eating crab's legs.
That's a great one.
Yeah, thank you.
I don't really have one. I haven't been injured that much, but I remember my buddy, we were at a ski hill, and I was like 12, and my friend was pretending he was Mad Mardigan, the Val Kilmer character from Willow, and he hit me by mistake with his ski pole. And it didn't really hurt that much. But you know, if you get hit in the head, it can sometimes lead to a lot of bleeding. So I've got blood coming, just gushing down my face. And it didn't even hurt. And I'm sitting there like bickering at him for doing it. But that'd be mine.
Actually, I will say this. Mm-hmm. You reminded me of something about when you're stupid and you're a kid.
Yeah.
Me and Jeff Merrick, who grew up together, and he was my best buddy, used to have a game. And it was called, I don't even know really what it was called, but my jaw's misaligned. Like, if you ever look at it carefully, it kind of leans to the right.
Oh.
And that's because Merrick basically broke it. So the game was, we would go to a lawn bowling. What is it called? A field?
Sure, why not?
A pitch? Whatever it is. Lawn bowling. It's a big, wide, grassy patch, right? We'd get a football, and you'd throw it as far as you could. And then the two of us would start to punch each other and, like, tackle each other and hammer each other. And then you would get up and run, and the other person would get up and tackle you again and punch you, and you would have to retrieve the football.
Yeah.
And if you retrieve the football, you got a point.
What a horrible game.
Yeah, we'd play to 5, Matt. We would play to 5. So one time, Merrick grabbed me by the jaw and began to bang my head into the ground using my jaw as a lever, and kind of, to this day, it kind of drifts right. My jaw swipes right. So I think in retrospect, that was pretty stupid.
Mm-hmm.
The game didn't catch on.
Yeah. No. Good.
It's
good.
We played to 5, Matt. And they were savage beatings. Savage.
Oh, my God.
My mother to this day is afraid when I say I'm going to Jeff's place. She's convinced. I guarantee you, if you gave her a polygraph, she is convinced that me and Merrick still wrestle in the basement.
I love the idea of it. Two men who are, you know, in their mid to late 40s with children. Oh, they're going to be wrestling.
I remember when his mom was still with us and she came in because we were so loud. We were in his room beating the hell out of each other. And I had his head wedged between the mattress on his bed and the wall. Yeah. And I was taking runs into the side of the bed.
Oh, it's good times being a kid.
Yeah. Any other? Do you have any sports questions? We're pretty. I still got my "Is it wrong to do?" So, is there any sports?
No. So, I'll ask one more, and then we'll get to "Is it wrong?" Joe 17. What subject should be banned from high school because you hated it? That's easy. French. Au revoir, français. Au revoir.
I had to take Latin because of the family I grew up in.
Yep.
And I don't find it that useful. So. But I feel like popular choice and history has banned Latin for us. So
yeah, yeah. Kind of like just been Darwinian sort of thing where eventually no one really uses it. I mean, the only reason you need Latin is to know what Super Bowl it is. Because it's always the Roman numeral. It's the only reason you need Latin. What Super Bowl is this? XXV. Oh, 25.
Well,
all right.
Said. Hey, before we get to the
Is it wrong?
Is it wrong? You know how people change their Twitter feed names for Halloween? Mm-hmm. Did you notice how I changed mine? It was almost always Red Bob Mackwitz, but now it is.
What? Yeah, it's some sort of jack-o'-lantern thing?
Mac-o'-lantern.
Mac-o'-lantern. That's good.
You know, and Strombo's got the Strombo show.
Yeah.
Everybody does it, right?
Yeah.
So I put together a list and solicited Toronto sports figures and Twitter name changes for Halloween.
Yep.
So this came in from the listeners. Thank you very much for this. Some of them pretty obvious, but some pretty good. Danny Madá wrote in Jose Bautista.
Yeah, okay.
Andrew Nowitzki writes in Russell in the Bushes Martin.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of subtle.
Yep.
Chelsea Darlington had a bunch of good ones. Shreddy Anderson.
That's
and there
good.
Was a picture of a knife, a little emoji of a knife. And Connor Skerrick.
Mm-hmm.
Not too bad. And Witch Marner.
Mitch Marner.
Right.
Good
so those
one.
From Chelsea. And Adam Soblak wrote in a different twist on Mitch Marner. Mitch Mourner.
Oh, nice.
Pretty good, eh?
That's good.
So I wrote up a list. You ready for this?
Yep. We got about 7 minutes.
Okay. So here is my Toronto Sports Figures Change Twitter Names list.
Okay.
Killiam Nylander.
Good.
James Van Screamsdyke.
Okay, yeah.
Steak Gardner.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep, not steak to eat, but you can kill a vampire with a steak. Zach Diamond. Ron Mamesy, Eric Fear, Bukas Noguera, Kill Lowry, Steve Pierce, but Pierce spelled like you pierce someone's heart.
Yep.
Josh, Donna the Dedelson.
Mm-hmm. That's your best one.
Thank you. And my last one, which we'll just take it for what it is, Mike Stabcock.
Okay, that's your best one.
Thank you.
Your worst is Eric Fear. Yeah.
Eric Fair. Yeah. Eric Fear. It's not so bad. Come on. Yeah. I kind of like Kill Lowry for some reason.
But Kyle wouldn't.
Okay, we can agree though?
Yeah.
Mike Stabcock.
Mike Stabcock.
The winner?
Yeah, that is. By the way, horrible porn name. Horrible porn name. Hey, honey, do you want to work with Mike Stabcock? No, I'm good.
No, I do not. No,
I'd rather work with sweaty Ron Jeremy. Yeah, he stinks, but doesn't have the Stabcock.
All right, so we'll wrap up this way, Maddie, with an is it wrong?
Yeah.
Now, to anybody who owns a home, you don't really deal with the recycling bins because you live in a condo and you've got the chute.
We got the chute.
And the chute is the best.
The chute of neglect.
It is so good. Do you wait? Because you're at the penthouse. Do you wait and hear the bag drop at the bottom?
Yeah.
It's the best sound.
Also, I don't understand the lazy people where they don't push it all the way in, where you open the chute and there's bags. I'm like, who are you lazy people? Anyway, continue.
So for those of us, I used to live in an apartment. We had the chute. That was great because you open it up, boom, it's gone. But for those of us who live in homes, the recycle bin is such a pain in the ass because you got to collect up all the garbage. And so it's in your house for 3 or 4 days.
And you got to divide it.
Right. Now they've got better bins. So at least the raccoons don't open it up and tear it up. So you have to clean chicken bones off your driveway. So there's that. But okay, so here's the thing. So there's two bins. One is for recycle material. And the other one's just for miscellaneous house junk. And yesterday was the miscellaneous house junk day. So I'm opening it up to put in some boxes to send out to the curb because Wednesday's my day. And I have noticed this many times. But there was about a dozen bags of dog poop collected in the bottom of our recycling bin.
What?
Because it has street access, we put it at the side of the driveway.
Yep.
So we don't put it on our lawn. We put it at the side of the driveway. So people walking by, walking their dogs, can take their bags of dog excrement.
Mm-hmm.
And it was by somebody clearly, like, unless this is an incredible coincidence, all the bags looked identical, like they had some kind of design on them.
Yeah.
Some kind of pinky design. So clearly somebody, as part of their routine, walks by our home, opens up the bin, drops this in, and walks off. So I throw this out to you, Matthew.
Yeah.
Is this wrong?
Yes, it's 100% wrong. First off, glad they picked up. These people don't annoy me. But here's the thing. If they do it once, okay. But you got to mix it up. You've got to put it in different people's bins. If they're doing the same one to you all the time, that's an attack on you and your family. Totally wrong.
Now, is it okay to do it even once? Because you've got a bag of your dog's business and you drop it on somebody else's yard, basically. Yeah. Like, this is our bin.
Yeah. No.
Shouldn't they take it home or dispose of it in a public place?
Yes. I guess for me, the fact that so many people don't do it at all, what they did is an improvement over doing nothing. But yes, if it's your dog, your responsibility, take it home. It's your dog poop. It's not Bob's dog poop. So I agree. Totally
now
here, wrong.
Now here's, and I was with you 100%, but then I start to think about it. Have you ever had a dog, Maddie?
No.
Okay. So to anybody who's owned a dog out there, you know that walking around with a bag of poop in your hand is one of the most demeaning things a person can do.
Waiting for that dog to poop is the most demeaning.
And sometimes, like it happens all the time, I'll walk in and I'll walk up the driveway and some poor dog owner has their, they're going on the lawn, mm-hmm. you know, two doors down.
Man's trying to best friend, my balls.
But it's you know, you run into people you know in the neighborhood and you're holding a bag of poop. It's pretty demeaning.
Yes.
So, and honestly, this is our recycle bin. Like it all gets thrown out. And it's not like we spend a lot of time in there. You know, they didn't leave it, you know, on our front porch and set it on fire. For about 5 seconds a week, I have access to this when I put our recycle out. So why should I care?
Because it's still being lazy. Like, you got to take it home. It's your dog. It's, you know, it's the ramifications of your actions. You can own a dog. You get all the good stuff, and you got to deal with the bad stuff.
Am I being a good neighbor, though, by presenting my bin and saying, if you need a solid, you do it. Now, I don't think the 12 in a row is acceptable.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be part of anybody's
interesting
plans.
Choice of using the word solid there, but I don't like it. I don't like people
doing it. Now, do you not like it just because it's dirty? Because you're a bit of a neat freak.
Well, I think most people, I don't know too many people who court dog poo and say, that's fine. We all hate dogs.
No, but also because you don't have a pet. You don't have a pet or a kitten, so you don't realize like how excrement plays a part in your life when you do.
Yeah, I know.
It's about 30% of your waking day.
Yeah, it's 30% too much. I mean, maybe that plays a part in it, but to me, that's all offside.
And you're kind of repressed that way, right?
Yeah.
Like you refuse to go to the washroom if anybody else is in the house, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like there's got to be distance between me and anyone else if I have to do a solid. I don't want anyone around. Nothing. I don't want to hear other people do it. I don't want them to hear me do it.
All right. I like presenting you with these things because I actually didn't know if I should be angry or offended by this.
You should be angry.
Okay.
You should.
Thank you. Yeah. And you know, usually I'm the one who gravitates to anger and you're the forgiving one.
Yeah,
so.
Not this time, Bob.
All right. Good to know.
Be angry. Fun podcast, Bob.
Yeah. We found a way to not really talk Leafs.
Yeah,
which we don't do very often.
Yeah, I figure. Well, yeah, they haven't played since their Monday win over the Kings. They're playing the Hurricanes tonight, so just felt like other stuff.
All right,
I will see you on Monday.
Monday is going to be the Halloween edition of the
podcast. Yeah, it is.
And then the following week, I think I'm going to be in Los Angeles, so I don't know if I'm going to be here for probably the whole week. We'll have to figure.
We'll figure out some sort of evergreen.
Yeah. All right then. So shall we wrap it then,
Bob? Have a great weekend.
You too, Maddie.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.